ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय
ॐ
नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय
ॐ
नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय The last verse in this chapter. Param Charu Rasam Tebhyo Dattva Bhagavadarpanam Gopi Prartha Sabhashura Tvanemur Bhuvimur Dabhi Param Charu Rasat Tebhyo Dattva Bhagavadarpanam Gopi Prartha Sabhashura Tvanemur Bhuvimur Dabhi Thereafter, they offered the Brahmins highly delicious foodstuffs, first offered to the personality of Godhead, and offered their respectful obeisances by touching their heads to the ground. They lived perfectly by protecting the cows and the Brahmanas. Please repeat. Thereafter, they offered the Brahmins highly delicious foodstuffs. First offered to the personality of Godhead. And offered their respectful obeisances. By touching their heads to the ground. They lived perfectly. By protecting the cows and the Brahmanas. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. The behavior exhibited by the descendants of Yadu in the pilgrimage site of Prabhas was highly cultured and exactly to the point of human perfection. The perfection of human life is attained by following three principles of civilization: protecting the cows, maintaining the Brahminical culture, and above all, becoming a pure devotee of the Lord. Without becoming a devotee of the Lord, one cannot perfect one's human life. The perfection of human life is to be elevated to the spiritual world where there is no birth, no death, no disease, and no old age. That is the highest perfectional aim of human life. Without this aim, any amount of material advancement and so-called comforts can only bring the defeat of the human form of life. Brahmanas and Vaishnavas do not accept any foodstuff which is not first offered to the personality of Godhead. Foodstuffs offered to the Lord is accepted by the devotees as the mercy of the Lord. After all, the Lord supplies all kinds of foodstuff both to the human beings and to other animals. A human being must be conscious of the fact that all foodstuffs, namely grains, vegetables, milk, water, etc., the prime necessities of life, are supplied for mankind by the Lord, and such foodstuffs cannot be manufactured by any scientist or materialist in a laboratory or factory established by human effort. The intelligent class of men are called Brahmanas, and those who have realized the absolute truth and his supreme personal feature are called Vaishnavas. But both of them accept foodstuffs, which are the remnants of sacrifice. Sacrifice is ultimately meant to satisfy the Yajna Purush, Vishnu. In Bhagavad Gita, it is said that one who accepts foodstuffs as the remnants of sacrifice is freed from sinful reactions, and one who cooks foodstuff for maintenance of his body takes in all kinds of sins, which leads only to suffering. The foodstuffs prepared by the Yadus at the Prabhas pilgrimage site to offer to the bona fide Brahmins there were all offered to the personality of Godhead Vishnu. The Yadus offered their sincere obeisances by touching their heads to the ground. The Yadus, or any enlightened family in Vedic culture, are trained for attainment of human perfection by total cooperation of service between the different divisions of social orders. The word Ururasam is also significant here. Hundreds of delicacies can be prepared simply by the combination of grains, vegetables, and milk. All such preparations are in the mode of goodness, and therefore may be offered to the personality of Godhead. As stated in Bhagavad Gita, the Lord accepts only foodstuffs which are within the range of fruits, flowers, leaves, and liquids, provided they are offered in complete devotional service. Devotional service is the only criteria for a bona fide offering to the Lord. The Lord assures that He positively eats such foodstuffs offered by devotees. So, judging from all sides, the Yadus were perfectly trained, civilized persons, and their being cursed by the Brahmin sages was only by the desire of the Lord. The whole incident was a warning to all concerned that no one should behave lightly with Brahmanas and Vaishnavas. Thus ends the Bhaktivedanta purport of the third chapter, third chapter of the Srimad Bhagavatam, entitled The Lord Pastimes Out of Vrindavan. Om Jnanati Mirandasya Jnananjana Sarakare Chakshuri Miritam Dina Tasmaya Shri Guru Venamaha Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nitananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Shiva Shari Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. The Yadus, accompanied by Lord Krishna and Balaram, after giving charity, which is the dharma of Grihasthas, is to give charity. Janasya Mahoyam Maham Mimeti. Otherwise, the natural inclination of I and mine overwhelms somebody, overwhelms people. Working, maintaining family, especially surrounded by children who are in complete illusion of being their bodies, and make strong demands from parents, what to speak of, the interaction between husband and wife, all of this is weight that needs to be counterbalanced. And the counterbalance is by that which I think is mine, because nothing is mine. I distribute to others, even starting with eating. So Srila Prabhupada would often say that proper Vaishnav culture is when one cooks, then after offering everything to Krishna, as is was done here. Here everything is described as Bhagavad Arpanam, where Krishna said Madarpanam, offering to me. Madarpanam, Bhagavad Arpanam, offering to Krishna. Everything is offered to Krishna like we offer. They did the same. And foodstuffs, I just lost my train of thought. So the foodstuffs that are offered to Krishna then become moyas, giving charity. So when Vaishnavas cook after they make their offering, the Prabhupada said they should go out to the door, and three times they call out, "Anyone who's hungry, please come and eat." Anyone, loudly. Anyone who's hungry, come. You're supposed to chant loudly. I've never known anyone to do this. I have one god brother who lived in Gita Nagari, and he did it. Even Mukitanagri was probably our most successful farm as far as farming was concerned. They were really a farm. New Vrindavan was like, and Prabhupada went to New Vrindavan and says, what are we doing here? If you've ever been there, it's just on top of hills. It's hills, so it's hilly country. There's nothing, there's no straight land anywhere. And so he, his wife's name was Indira, and I don't remember what his name is. Anyway, he used to do that every day. They used to cook, and he had a few children, and but everybody, especially the brahmacharis, knew that, so they were all hiding in the bushes. And when they came out and said, anyone who's hungry, come, then all of a sudden, 10 devotees would jump out of the bushes. But they knew that was going to happen. So they prepared like that, and then they would feed them all, and then they would sit down, and they would eat. So that is the principle of always giving. Srila Prabhupada gave his own father an example. He said that every day his father would feed at least two or three sadhus, sometimes more. And it doesn't matter who they were. They may have been mindbodies, there may have been so many different people, but his father always had some sadhus for lunch. And even to his mother's upset, why you're inviting some people who are not even Vaishnavas. They were Vaishnavas. Why are you even inviting non-Vaishnavas? The Prabhupada said his father was very liberal. So he maintained the principle, all right, even though they're not Vaishnavas, still, and even though sometimes they may not even be sadhus, because we have in India you see so many people dressed in saffron and they wander around. We have another word in the West for them. Most of them, we call them bums over here. Over there, they call them sadhus. They just dress in saffron, and they go around and beg and eat, and they have nothing really to do with spiritual life. But Prabhupada's father was faithful to the principle that no, it doesn't matter who they are, but it's for our benefit that we should not just remain restricted within the confines of the family and our own people. And of course, everyone who came, Prabhupada's father would say, please bless my son to become a servant of Srimati Radharani. And then Chaitanya Charitamrita Prabhupada says, and now by the grace of the Lord, that desire has been fulfilled. So here, Prabhupada says this Guru Rasam, very delicious foodstuffs. And of course, this concept of only offering those things which Krishna likes is our Vaishnav tradition. It's our secret weapon. It's the most important aspect of, in one sense, Krishna consciousness. And that is eat Krishna prasadam. But here Srila Prabhupada points out that this is not only the conduct of Vaishnavas, but it's also of Brahmanas. So Prabhupada would say, devotees, unless it's offered to Krishna, we don't eat it. And sometimes we find ourselves maybe a little hard-pressed to do the type of offerings that we may make on an altar and so on in everyday life, but still it's a general practice or principle that one follows. Not only offering things, but who is cooking? Srila Prabhupada points out that in strict Brahminical culture, Prabhupada would say that there was a place in Calcutta, I forget where the Brahmin workers, they were working. Usually Brahmins would take some kind of clerical job or office job. They wouldn't do labor. and they would be engaged by government or something like that. And Prabhupada said that for lunch, then they would go to this particular place where the government provided the Brahmins with cooking spaces. And the Brahmins would cook their lunch and they would eat their lunch. And then Prabhupada says that a real pure Brahmin, he wouldn't even eat anything cooked by his wife. Only eat what he cooks himself. Because whoever cooks, they're cooking their consciousness and they're cooking their karma into the food. So ultimately the best thing is, and that was Prabhupada's practice also. If you read, for instance, that butler, whatever it was, gazetteer or the newspaper, then it says that he doesn't eat anything that he doesn't cook or that's cooked by a woman. And Srila Prabhupada first came. He cooked for himself. That was Prabhupada's own practice. He had his three-level cooker, three-tier cooker, and dal on the bottom, and vegetables, rice on the top, dal steamed, and it was a steamer, and then he would chance the vegetables afterwards, and he would also make some karela or bindi or things like that to it, and that was Prabhupada's practice, and he would make his own chapatis, make his own roti, and that was Srila Prabhupada's practice. Why? Because, as Bernard Shaw says, you are what you eat. So ultimately, the food that you eat, and of course, he wasn't necessarily thinking about karma or consciousness, he was just thinking about the substance itself. But the type of food that you eat builds your body. And your body determines your state of mind and the way you think. So what you eat, definitely you are what you eat. And then for Vaishnavas, it goes even further than that. It's even more subtle. Then there's the whole issue of karma. In other words, what is the karma? That's, everything's involved with karma. I speak into this microphone, I take on the karma of people who've spoken into it before. Because their germs are on there. That's also karma. And similarly, there's not only just karma, but there's also consciousness. And so Srila Prabhupada would be very particular about who was the cook. Because cooking is yagya, yagya shishtashna, so you're performing a sacrifice, and your consciousness is present within that food that we cook. And that's why people have such an experience with prasadam. Because when we have our restaurant, our bakery, and of course for Srila Prabhupada, this was one of the main fronts of his cultural conquest, was giving people prasadam, not vegetarian food, because they can get vegetarian food anywhere, but prasadam. Because the consciousness, first, devotees are sinless, there's no karma involved. Second, they're doing this. This is their service, their mission, to give Krishna consciousness to others. And whatever our consciousness is, our chanting, our devotional activities, all of that is also, in part, cooked into that food. And when people eat that, that's what they taste. That's what gets them hooked. It may not even necessarily be as good. For instance, good Indian restaurants can prepare the same thing that we cook from the material point of view much better. It may taste much better, but it won't have the same effect. So people will come because there will always be an ingredient in our food that they can't find anywhere else, and they'll find the bhakti. So patram pushpam palam toyam yome bhaktya prayachati. So it's just bhakti. Krishna tastes the bhakti, and we also taste the bhakti. We can also taste it. And that is such a unique thing, and it also, of course, brings about a change in heart. And for that reason, at a certain point, Srila Prabhupada started giving instructions starting 1975. Now we have enough temples. Now we should open restaurants. Restaurants have the added feature, not only is it that we're distributing prasadam, but they maintain themselves. This building doesn't maintain itself. We have to maintain it. But a restaurant maintains itself. And it also serves as a preaching center. Prabhupada got this from the Christian Scientists, who had this reading rooms everywhere. They have them here also, reading rooms. They just have bookstores and reading rooms. So you go in and you can buy books. They have so many books. And then they have a whole area where just you sit down and you read. So that was Prabhupada's idea. Also, we have a restaurant and we have a reading room where people can also read. And more or less, we're affecting the same thing. Deity worship. Deity worship is for devotees. Karmis don't need deities. They need prasadam. They need the holy name. And if they're inquisitive, then they need philosophy. But even Srila Prabhupada said that philosophy is for smart people. Most people aren't so interested. But we gain a lot of ground and achieve a real state of purification of the heart by getting people to chant Hare Krishna and by getting them to take prasadam. And that was more or less Srila Prabhupada's emphasis. Although Prabhupada placed so much emphasis on his books, but when it came to general preaching strategy for people, the first wave of our preaching, then it was the holy name and prasadam. And so as potent as our prasadam is, to that degree, then it will have effect, because it will also depend on who's cooking. So devotees also who, I never had that experience of tasting Prabhupada's cooking. But in the very beginning, Prabhupada was the cook. Prabhupada cooked the Sunday feasts. He was the one who served, he cooked every day. And he was the one who served the devotees. He went around serving the devotees and served them more and more. So what Srila Prabhupada cooked, that had a very special taste, a very extraordinary taste. Like chanting Hare Krishna. According to our consciousness, the nature of the holy name is manifest more and more. So similarly, according to our consciousness, Krishna Prasadam becomes more and more potent according to the consciousness of the cook. So these were... And now here Srila Prabhupada is emphasizing another point, namely, how is human life attained? Very simple thing. So one is cow protection, the other is maintaining Brahminical culture, and the other one is becoming a pure devotee of Lord Krishna. So becoming pure devotee of Lord Krishna, that we know. Brahminical culture... Here's an aspect of Brahminical culture. You offer everything that you cook. You don't eat forbidden foodstuffs. And so many other things, rising early, bathing 3 times a day, chanting Gayatri Mantra, restraining the senses, samodamastapasocham, shantirajamayivacharsu. There's the 8 qualities of Brahman, and there's so many other qualities that are described in Shastra. And specifically that one is meant to live in the mode of goodness. What are the qualities of the mode of goodness? We study the 14th chapter of Bhagavad Gita. We live according to that. And by practicing the Brahminical culture, that means that one invokes the quality of goodness. And in the mode of goodness, spiritual life becomes very easy. In the mode of passion and ignorance, it's very difficult. In a mode of goodness, then everything is conducive for cultivating spiritual life. And as we were talking yesterday, that Brahmins are meant to be maintained. Often when we go out, either we may do Harinam, or we especially do book distribution, people say, why don't you go get a job? Isn't it? The thinking, we're just, why are you living off society? We're not living off. This is a service. This is the integral part of society. The integral part is the contribution of principles and values that elevate human beings so that they don't degrade. And unfortunately, in our materialistic society, that isn't appreciated so much. Still, they appreciate to some extent. So, for instance, the government will know that there's a necessity for a Orthodox church or a Catholic church. Why? Because they add to values, because they add to honesty. If there isn't someone who's preaching people honesty, then everyone's going to cheat on their taxes. It's not productive for the government. They want that the church tells everyone to be honest, not to be criminals. That means that the police department has to grow up and so on. So many other things, it's integral that unless there's always a balance to society, to materialistic society, because generally society means materialistic in one way or another, whether it's a very gross materialistic society or a Vedic society, now ultimately the tendency is there, so it needs to be balanced. And so yes, Brahminical culture means we invest in that. We think that this is very, very valuable, that we are maintaining people whose full-time business is to practice spiritual life and to teach it and give it to others. Because by doing that, then everyone becomes, they have this saying, a rising tide raises all ships. So when the tide comes in, the little ships go up, the big ships go up, everybody benefits. So when people's consciousness is elevated, then everyone benefits. Materialistic people benefit, government benefits, churches benefit, everyone benefits. And cow protection. Of course, that's unheard of. Now it's just cow slaughter, animal slaughter. 70 billion animals a year. Can you imagine that? 70 billion animals. So it's not, even I was just seeing the other day, for instance, in China, they slaughter 2.5 or almost 3 million pigs a day. So there's no question of there not being another war, that there not being natural catastrophes. You can't avoid it. Either that sinful reaction is burnt off by spiritual practice, which doesn't seem to be taking place anywhere, or you have to get the reaction for it. So one or the other. And when that reaction builds up to a certain level, then ultimately it's already going on now. You can't even count how many wars are going on in the world. In fact, there are more refugees at the present time in the world, war refugees, than there are during the Second World War. There are over 50 million refugees in the world at the present time, just due to war. That's a phenomenal amount. That means people who are displaced from their home, living in tents, eating at handouts, and they may be poor people, or they may be doctors, lawyers, IT specialists. When you're in a tent, it's all the same. So therefore cow protection, especially cow protection, but actually the protection of all life. But essentially, the cows, these are formulas. Krishna creates the world, he establishes a certain order. When you follow that, everything works nicely. When you don't, everything gets, you know, if you use your computer as a hammer, then it doesn't work for very long because it's not designed to be a hammer. So similarly, if you use the principles or use the things in the material world wrongly, then ultimately everything breaks down and things just don't work, which means you don't get the results. end result is that you won't get rain, or you get too much rain, or you won't get food, and so on. Chaos. So our Krishna consciousness movement is meant to reestablish these principles, to teach these principles, to explain to people that this is a scientific system. We're not talking about belief. This is how things work. And if you act accordingly, then you get a good result. If you go against it, maybe for the short time you'll get a good result, but in the medium term, not even the long term, in the medium term, in your own life, you just look every 40 years, well, it wasn't 40 years, First World War, Second World War, there's only 20 years between the two. So any 20, 30, 40, 50 years, there's some kind of disaster taking place. Why? Just by accident? Things don't happen by accident in such a highly organized, structured system as our world is. Anyway, you all have this place. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, Amara Agya Guru Hanatane E Desh. Desh means your field of activity. This is Timisoara, is the field of activity. And we should try to give people the opportunity to also avail themselves of Krishna consciousness in the way that we have, and to also solve the problems of life, be happy, and go back home, back to Godhead. Prasadam distribution, book distribution, chanting Hare Krishna, giving people the opportunity to come and worship and learn how to do it in their own homes. This is reality. All these other things we should not get too distracted by. Don't take it too seriously. All this material world, it's all a dream. It's Mahavishnu's dream. We think it's real, but for him, it's just a dream. All of them, all these universes, everything, it's just a dream. And we are actually, for us also, it is our dream. It's just like at night. At night we go to sleep and we dream, and you have a dream body. And when we daytime comes, we think, nah, I'm awake. And you're not awake. This is another dream body. This is just like the dream body at night. Except that that's a subtle dream body, and this is a gross dream body. But this body is also a figment of our imagination, and identifying with it is illusion. This is also a dream. And this world is also a dream. It's not real. And whatever we have relationships with and so on, this building and my family and everything else, that's also all a dream. It's also a dream that I have a husband or a wife or children. At a certain point you wake up, Mrityu Sarva Harashtaham, my dream's over. Death comes and everything is taken away. So we have to live in this world because we're here for the time being, but we shouldn't take it too seriously. Just like sometimes when you're having a bad dream, then you're aware, you know, oh, this is only a dream, isn't it? Even in your dream, you know, it's a good thing I'm just dreaming. It's time to wake up now. So also, it's time for us to wake up. And but in that period that we're here, I was just listening. Prabhupada is talking to Tamal Krishna Maharaj. And I forget what the exact context, or at least what the impetus was, but Prabhupada was talking about, he says a soldier. He says a soldier takes a vow. Either he dies in the battle or he gains victory. So similarly for us, for devotees, we live or we die, what difference does it make? When we're alive, we're serving Krishna. If we die, we go to serve Krishna. So living, dead, it doesn't matter. Prabhupada was so a matter of fact about the fact of whether we're living or dying. Why? Because yes, when we die, we go to serve Krishna. So we're here, we're serving Krishna. There we're going to serve Krishna. So for us, death is not a problem. In fact, sometimes it may look like a better solution to a lot of the problems that we're facing here. But still, in the time that we're here, then we have the opportunity to give others the same Krishna consciousness that we had the opportunity to get. And that's reality. That's reality. Prabhupada says, I guess we should take him at his word, he said that Krishna has a book and he writes down devotees' achievements in his book. And he keeps track of what we've done. And there's this nice thing that later on that Srila Prabhupada said, that Prabhupada said that I want a certificate from Krishna that this man has done something for me. So same thing, we should also want a certificate from Krishna that this person has done something. And when Prabhupada was that was after Rath Yatra in 1976 in New York, and Prabhupada was very sick. Even he just went out to Rath Yatra for a little while. He wrote on the card, gave a 10-minute talk, and then came back to the temple. He didn't go on the whole procession, and he didn't stay for the whole program, although it was a very historic event because it was 10 years after Prabhupada came to New York. So after 10 years, here he was with 3 Rath Yatra cards, going down Fifth Avenue, the busiest street in New York City. 10 years ago, Prabhupada was out on the street when he was living with some crazy drug addict up in a loft, and that person went crazy. Prabhupada went out, had to run out on the street, and he was just standing there. He didn't know where to go or what to do. And 10 years later, there were hundreds and hundreds of devotees, and they had that skyscraper in Manhattan. So it was a great victory. And anyway, Prabhupada was very sick, and devotees were telling Srila Prabhupada he should go to Hawaii to rest, or he should go to Texas because it'll be warmer over there, the climate wasn't good. And Prabhupada was scheduled to go to England. And so there's no question of good weather in England. So the devotees were here and there, and Prabhupada was entertaining, and then finally Prabhupada says, no, let us go. We'll go to England. And even when devotees were coming down the elevator, as Prabhupada was leaving, and they were coming down the elevator, and the GBC sannyasi in the elevator were sort of pleading with Prabhupada, no, Prabhupada, don't go to England, it won't be good for your health. And so Prabhupada arrived, and the elevator doors opened, and of course there's all these hundreds of devotees doing kirtan, seeing Prabhupada off. As Prabhupada turned to the other devotees who was talking to, and everyone was wondering what's going on. Prabhupada wasn't walking out, he was standing in the elevator. He said, I want the blessing to be able to fight for Krishna just like Arjuna, just to my last breath. And Prabhupada left. So that's our... That's the mood that we're trying to follow from Srila Prabhupada, is that fight for Krishna here, and then that way we become recognized. Hare Krishna. Try Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Shishi Gornitai ki jai. Hare Krishna.